Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality with your host, David Gagan. Engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and this is the show where we talk about subjects which are critical to our happiness and spiritual evolution. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room on next week's show, as well as posted on my website, which is davidgagan.com, hopefully within a day or so of the show. When you visit the site, you can ask additional questions, even about other shows. You can listen to any previous show on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com by searching for either David Gagan or Common Sense Spirituality. I've launched a new podcast titled Aspects of Spirituality, which is also on iHeartRadio. There I explain my worldview and what I've learned about the mysteries of life in short weekly podcasts. I hope you'll join me there. Today we're going to discuss shamanism, a spiritual subject the Western world knows little about. Our guest is Howard G. Charing, director of the Eagle Wings Center for Contemporary Shamanism and author of The Accidental Shaman. He has taught at Dr. Michael Harner's Foundation for Shamanic Studies, holds workshops internationally, and in addition runs plant medicine retreats in the Peruvian Amazon. He lives in Transylvania these days and also in Peru. Howard Charing, thanks for joining us, Howard. How are you?
Thank you very much, David. I'm doing well, thank you.
Great. Hey, I read your book, The Accidental Shaman, and found it a fun read, interesting. And you mentioned an elevator accident you had. Could you tell us about that accident and how that impacted your life?
Well, it changed my life. I mean, I was at work, and this is back in 1983, I think. Yeah, and I went into an elevator at work and pushed a button to go up, and suddenly, you know, my stomach was in my mouth, and I realised the lift was crashing. The elevator was crashing. Sorry, I'm using my English words occasionally, so I hope you don't mind that. And I knew I was going to die. This was it, you know. And at that moment, I kind of did. I was gone. I'd left my body. I was somewhere else. But I still had this kind of consciousness. And I realized I don't want to die. Then within an instant, I'm back in my body thinking, what now? And all this is happening while the elevator is falling at kind of 11.7 meters a second. So it's really, really zooming down. But for me, at that moment, I seemed to have infinite amount of time. Time kind of stopped. I was just kind of in a different kind of time universe. And I was thinking, what do I do now? And I realized, well, maybe if I jump up in the air when the elevator crashes down the bottom, I'll be in the air. And I tried to jump up. Of course, you can't do that because, you know, you're in free fall. So, and then I knew exactly what to do, precisely exactly what to do. And that was like, took out my tissues and put them in my mouth. And I got on my haunches, and as soon as I'd done that, then the elevator crashed at the bottom, and I was severely injured. But, you know, I mean, without having those tissue stuffed in my mouth, I would have certainly chopped off my tongue because my upper, lower jaw smashed against my upper jaw and all that. But I survived. I was, you know, completely, you know, severe back injuries, fractured neck and so on. And I was out of action for about 2.5 to 3 years. It was really, really difficult time. But that changed my life because my whole life kind of restarted from that moment. It was an unforgettable moment. It was a new beginning, shall we say? Yeah.
Where did you go from there? How'd you go from there? You had nothing to do. You weren't religious or spiritual or anything before that, let alone tied to the shamanic information. How did you get from the elevator accident to this?
That's a good question. I mean, I was unable to walk, unable to stand up, unable to kind of hold the weight of my head and my shoulders, and all that, kind of a collars and wheelchair and so on. And I spent like 18 months in total misery, just sitting down, looking out the window, watching leaves fall from trees and that kind of thing. All my kind of kind of zest for life had disappeared. And but I tried to get some help, obviously, you know, I saw a massage therapist, and then I saw this osteopath and so on. And it was during that session with this osteopath, who was just trying to relieve the pain, which was the main thing, he came up with something very strange, and he asked me, Howard, do you want to get well again? And and to be honest, you know, I didn't say yes right away. I had to think about it, because I kind of got used to being kind of an invalid and so on, you know. But then I realized I had to kind of look deep into myself, really deep into myself, and I was a yes, I want to get well again. Then he told me, you have to forgive all the people that you blame for this accident. And this accident was caused by human error. The elevator system was on maintenance, but the maintenance engineers didn't switch the system down. It shouldn't be inoperative and so on. But and so I forgave them. I gripped my teeth and I forgave them, you know, sincerely forgave them. And for that moment of forgiveness, everything changed. It was an incredible experience. And the funny thing is, the osteopath said to me, what happened just then? What did I do? I said, what, don't you remember what you said? No, what happened? And that was even more mysterious.
That is mysterious, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is interesting. So you got into this shamanic technology, really. What is a shamanic journey? Everybody's heard about it, but what is it?
Well, yeah, it's a shamanic journey is you use kind of entering an altered state, and often people use percussion, sound, rhythm to enter this altered state. But it's a directed journey, and in this shamanic journey, the world is seen as, or reality is seen as having three distinct zones: the middle world, which we exist in now, and the upper world and the lower world. It's the upper world lived for kind of ancestors and teachers and spirits and spirit teachers and so on, and angels and so on and so forth. In the lower world, it's much more kind of a earthy environment. It's much more nurturing, and it has a sense of the nurturing powers of the earth and that kind of feeling. And there people connect with spirit guides in animal form and so on. And the journey is a directed way to go to these places, encounter these beings, and ask for help, ask questions, get guidance, and so on and so forth. It's an interesting thing, and people do get a lot from it. Yeah.
Do you have to have is it a hallucinogenic type of thing? Do you need drugs and such like that to take that journey, or no?
No, it's not. People use, as I said, people use percussion or rhythm, drums, rattles, or clapping your hands and so on. And percussion, regular pulse of drum beat, alters the consciousness. I mean, there's something that, interesting enough, that science has kind of indicated that around 200 to 220 pulses per minute, for pulse you can read a drum beat, the brain shifts consciousness, goes into a different state of awareness and so on. And it's that altered state that you move out of the everyday material physical reality, and you interact, as I said, with beings outside the physical world, incorporeal beings. And you can get guidance, you can get help, but it's very much structured. It's a structured thing with a drum, with a beginning and an end, and so on. It's not, I wouldn't say hallucinogenic drugs. They're a very, very different thing. They're a different experience.
Okay. You know, a number of years ago, maybe 10 or maybe more than that, I went to somebody that proclaimed to be have shamanic capabilities, and I had one of those journeys, and it had no drugs involved. It was just, as you say, the percussion type of instruments that went along with it, and for me it didn't work. Is there something, do I have to prepare myself more for it, or why do you think it might not have worked?
Obviously, I can't offer respond exactly to your question. That's a very subjective, personal thing.
Right.
But in general, people in everyday life, one of the things is they're very much attuned to a visual sense. You know, I'm going to go on a journey, I'm going to, nice to see you, and see you again, and so on. The visual kind of sense perspective dominates our way of thinking. And a lot of people go into journey with the expectation of seeing, of having a visual experience. But visual experience is just one of the ways. I mean, there's other senses, sound, auditory, there's smell, there's taste. There's also the kinesthetic experience, where a person just feels what's going on, they know what's going on, and so on. So without knowing anything about your particular story, you may have had an experience, but it wasn't what you expected. And we're very good at editing out things we don't expect, and having expectations is it actually limits things. So it's best to go in without any expectations, and just the entire experience, although it may not be what a person expects, I want a visual thing, I want to see this, I want to see that, there could be a very, very valid experience, but that needs to be discussed, that needs to be kind of brought out of the person after their journey.
You talk a lot in the book about the animal kingdom, and I think most everybody would agree that animals, certainly the higher level animals, are conscious. Is there a difference between the human and the animal consciousness or spirit?
Yeah, well, we are the ones basically who are self-reflective. I don't think, I'm not including mammals such as dolphins and whales, which have a very, very large brain capacity and clearly can communicate in ways we don't even understand. So, but we are the self-reflective animals on this planet, and we also are the kind of the animals who judge ourselves. So we're never satisfied to be what we are, do what we are. We always endeavor to be different things. But that creates a whole different kind of interaction with the planet, as we all know. So. We are the species on this planet which do the self-reflection stuff.
Okay. Now, how can we have interaction with these with the animals from the consciousness on a consciousness level?
Oh yeah, a lot of people do. I mean, I don't do it personally, but I know people who really, really know what they're. Pet dog, their cat is thinking. They can communicate, uncannily communicate the mutual needs they have, and so on. So yeah, if you're open to it, you have to be open to it and not see an animal as a thing. I mean, what we tend to do is we see nature, we objectify nature, we see nature as a collection of things. But in the way that the shamanic way, everything is alive. The tree has a consciousness. You can communicate with the tree. You can communicate with the plant. And there's a whole body of practices about relating with nature. The fundamental thing, it's not an object. It's not just a thing. So if you open-minded and can turn your ideas that you're communicating with a living being, which is part of this planet, and we're part of it too, yeah, that's possible. I mean, people still do it. It's not like I'm talking about something fanciful here. People in indigenous communities, they communicate with plants, and that a lot of Westerners are actually going to learn kind of how they do it, their methods and their kind of methodology, and they can bring it back into their lives, and that's what's a very, very beautiful thing.
Yeah, you know, there have been studies done, and I don't know why science doesn't look into it a little bit more, but where people will go, especially in the plant world, and they'll set up plants in as close to identical situations, environmental situations. They'll be in the sun, same amount of time, temperature, so on and so forth. And one of them, the plants, they'll keep them in, you know, different rooms, I guess. And one of them they'll treat really nicely and such, and the other they'll be really harsh with. And the ones that are treated well really flourish and do well. And the other ones wilt it's amazing studies that they've found. And, it really goes to your point that there is a consciousness, or at least that's what these tests to me would imply.
Well, I think the more they imply, I think they're pretty, pretty, pretty definitive. I mean, there's, I'm going to talk about two things about this. One is the Findhorn community. They've been going around for 60, 70 years in Scotland, and they grow the biggest vegetables and fruits that you could possibly imagine, because that they communicate with the plants, they communicate with the vegetables, and the plants respond to this. I mean, but talking about plant reaction, and I wrote about this in my first book called Plant Spirit Shamanism. There was a former CIA lie detector specialist called Clive Baxter, and one day he got the notion of connecting a plant, one of his plants in his office, to his lie detector machine, and he started to express negative feelings to the plant, such as the leaf was burning and the thing was going to be destroyed and so on. And guess what? His polygraph thing went zoop, 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 went crazy. And then he realized, and he started to change things around and started more harmonious, more benign thoughts and feelings, and the whole thing changed. So and here we have kind of a CIA polygraph specialist working with plants, and his results were amazing. I mean, that I cover that in the book, but it's obvious when you work with plants and you're kind of involved with nature that plants are aware, they have an awareness, but we see them as things. And if we were to change, and I think the change is happening, is but slowly but surely, change our views, attitudes towards nature, and see ourselves as an intrinsic part of it rather than an outsider. There's nature, then there's ourselves, and that's what creates this kind of a materialistic objectification of nature.
Yeah, I agree with that. How about the mineral kingdom? Right? Is that the same thing? Minerals conscious?
Minerals are conscious, yeah. I mean, I work actually with stones and so on, and some of the high vibration minerals such as quartz crystals and amethyst crystals. I don't work with those so much, but certainly with stones. And the funny thing is, stones hold energy. There's a thing they can do is to hold energy. So, for example, you can place sit with a stone in your hand and think warm, beautiful feelings about yourself, about your life, about the stone, and consciously move those feelings, move that kind of energy into the stone, and you'll find that the stone holds that. And then you can place these stones around your house, you can place them near plants, and you'll find that plants start to kind of become stronger and greener and firmer and so on, so yeah. Obviously, you can't communicate with a stone or mineral as you can with a different kind of consciousness like a plant or an animal. But they have something for sure. They are alive. All physical life as we know it, is based on the mineral kingdom. There's without minerals, there's no plants. Without plants, there's no animals. Nothing.
I have heard that crystals are pure consciousness. I don't know if it's true or not, but. Interesting concept.
Yeah, well, I many years ago I had a crystal healing, and it really kind of it rocked my boat for sure. It was a very, very powerful experience. And the other thing, I think I mentioned this in the book actually, I was visiting Egypt, and I had a session in the King's Chamber.
Yes,
in
you
the,
did.
In the Cheops Pyramid. And in that chamber, there's a sarcophagus, a giant granite sarcophagus. And science knows that granite has all sorts of electrical properties and so on. Anyway, I got in that sarcophagus, and I started to have hallucinations. Something really, really happened there. It's like a receiver, transmitter, and so on. And yeah, there's no surprise there. Quartz crystals are used in all sorts of communication technology, computers and radios and everything. So yeah, I think we're just touching on this. I mean, obviously, if a scientist opens up a little bit and starts to kind of de-objectifies a mineral like a quartz and so on, and they may find some surprising results that will clearly challenge their paradigm, but you never know. But I think we're just at the nursery stages of this. I couldn't
agree with you more. I think you're absolutely right. We're just getting started on this.
Yeah.
You talk a lot about alternative reality. Tell us about that.
Well, yeah, alternative reality. Well, let me just get my thoughts together on this one.
Okay.
I'll start with a simple kind of analogy here. we're talking to a person, yeah, we've seen an object, we're looking at a tree and so on, and we experience that person, that tree, to be something outside of ourselves, to be a solid object, solid thing. But we know that that is an illusion. We know that's just a way of our perception, because the more you go into this, it becomes, it ends up being subatomic particles, quantum particles, appearing and disappearing and constantly moving, yet we perceive this to be solid. I mean, that alone is got to suggest that reality as we know it is kind of suspect as a solid thing. It is an illusion. That's a given. But in the world of shamans, and particularly with the hallucinogenic plants, I think I have to bring up the things like ayahuasca and psilocybin and so on. They open that door to that kind of other reality, that other kind of consciousness behind the physical reality. It's where you can interact with the blueprints or the matrix of the physical reality and so on. It's a very different experience. It's not something you can just do easily. You have to really kind of go into some deep meditation or work with kind of a medicine plants and so on, which are gateways or kind of guides to this other reality and so on.
Do you still do plant retrievals, so to speak, or trips into Peru and such like that with people?
I do indeed. Yeah, every year I hold a retreat in the Amazon. Yeah.
What's that? What do you do on that? What's that all about?
Well, the first thing, well, it's to people want to get out of the rat race, get out of the everyday world, and explore themselves or heal themselves. I mean, what the plants do. I'm speaking very generally here, because there's so many different plants you can work with, which influence, have an effect on so many different aspects of who we are and so on. Some plants cleanse, some plants purge. And when I say cleanse and purge, I'm not just talking about the physical contents of your stomach. I'm talking about old fears and emotions and pain and traumas. And so you kind of go into a semi-isolation. I mean, you're looked after, food is brought to you, and so on and so forth. But and the idea of this semi-isolation is to kind of quiesce our animal, human, social, monkey minds. And if we do this, we can become more plant-like. And the more plant-like you can become, the closer you can communicate with the plant consciousness. So you need to become more plant-like. That's the first thing, you know. And when you do that, you'll find that the consciousness of the plants is a very vibrant, very living thing, and that can really help us. And we know plants help us, apart from the fact that without plants, there's no animal life, there's no human life. We're totally, totally dependent on plants, you know. But there's another interaction going on with plants and animals and humans and so on. And when you can quiesce the human social monkey mind kind of thing, you can get closer to the plant, and that can open up a whole new avenue for your consciousness, your awareness, and your healing. So there's so many different things. I mean, there's some plants I've been dieting for many, many years. It's called a diet. And some plants which alter your sensory awareness, so you can start to zoom in on sounds. You can smell things that you couldn't smell before. There's a whole vast spectrum of sensory awareness which the plants can give you, and it's a very fascinating experience. And it just opens the door to kind of that in our everyday consciousness, our everyday sensory systems, we're kind of limited, and so the plants can open you up to a much broader spectrum and so on.
That's kind of fascinating, actually. So it's kind of a way to see through the illusion. You know, I think most of us agree we live in an illusion. So it's a way to help us see through the illusion and see reality a little bit clearer. Is that what we're saying here?
Yes, but I mean, it has to have a purpose, has to have a function. The thing about shamanism, it's not an airy-fairy, up-in-the-air thing. It has to be pragmatic. the whole thing, all the work that you do in these other realities, these other states of consciousness, is to help you as a human being in your life in the physical world. And that to me is the defining characteristic of the characteristic of shamanism. It's about living your life here as a human being, and all the other work you do and all the other realities and other fields of consciousness is only about living as a human being here on earth. That basically is it. So yeah.
You talk about opposites. You say we live in a world of opposites. What's that about? What's that all about?
Opposites. Oh, I don't remember saying that. Did I write that?
Yeah, it's you did. It's opposites being, when we learn from opposites. We learn from you can't learn love until you
That's the profound teaching there in many respects. That we all want to be happy, to have love and so on and so forth, to be kind, to be compassionate. But without some kind of context, that becomes kind of meaningless. We need to have the challenges, we need to have the messy, gritty, dirty experiences in our life that we can learn from. It's a way to help you to grow. So people can say, oh, everything's a mess, my life is awful, everything's bad. But from another perspective, why? What is there to learn from this? What is going on? Why is this happening? And in that opposite, you'll find the kind of the treasure, the nugget, and so on. So we need that. We need that. It's like going skiing or in the snow, and everything's white, and you can't discern your landscape. You don't know where you are. We need to have some kind of some reference points, and they may not be comfortable, but they're there. If you have the right attitude in many respects, they're there to show you something about yourself, about what is not resolved in you. And so it can lead to a very healing, beneficial kind of circumstance for you. But we need those opposites.
You talked about a couple of places about negative energy and negative and wounded energy, and how it still exists in places where atrocities happened a long time ago. A little bit about that. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. Well, now and then, I'm asked to clear a house or clear a place and so on, and because things aren't working there, if it's a business or a restaurant or whatever, we don't get any customers and people don't feel comfortable there, and people don't stay very long and so on. So I've had a few of these, there is, when I go into my altered state of consciousness, it's like an imprint, an embedded energy, which I can perceive what it is and where it's coming from some kind of atrocity, some kind of murder, whatever you want to see, or killing and things, and that can be cleared. That's an energy which hasn't been cleared. It's like the thing we think of a graveyard and think, oh, graveyard, spooky, scary place. It's actually a very beautiful place. The energy is there, very beautiful. People have come there, people have prayed, people have made blessings, people have, opened their heart out to the departed. And it has a very, very beautiful energy. And I'm speaking kind of an everyday thing. You go to the hospital, you go to the casualty department, you've hurt your hand or something, you have to wait for a couple of hours, and you're sitting there and you feel miserable. You feel kind of down. It's like a heavy weight on you because you're in a place where people have been sitting there feeling ill, feeling kind of terrible, feeling awful, and the energy is still there. It's not nothing fanciful. We come across it every day. If something really atrocious, like really horrendous has happened, you can bet it doesn't matter when it was. There's no linear time in this. The linear time is also this kind of illusion. The energy is still there. It can be cleared. It's a very valid thing, and we need to pay more attention in everyday lives to places we go. Do we feel comfortable here? Is it like right here? Do we feel nice here? Because you can become very aware of this. This is a good place. People are aware of this. They have intuition, they feel it, but because they're not kind of aware of it, they kind of push it aside or ignore it.
Yeah, there's a old jail down in Boston that they've turned into a bunch of restaurants and a hotel. And I always thought that that would be, you know, have a lot of that negative energy still there. And we've gone a number of times, and it doesn't seem to. Of course, it's a very lively place now, and a lot of people, very lively people are there, and maybe they've, maybe somehow the energy has cleared out of it. But boy, when I first went in there, I thought, this is going to be grim. But I was surprised it wasn't.
Yeah, well, that's very good. Maybe they've done something. Maybe they've actually really done some extensive cleansing, clearing work, you know, with attention focus on that. Yeah,
exactly. So it doesn't have to stay. I guess that is one of your points. It can be cleared, and you can clear that out. How do you clear it? How would you go and clear a place like that, that you went to a house that had bad experiences?
Well, for start, it's not something I advertise. It's not something I really want to do, because it can be a very, very unpleasant experience, you know, because you see what's happened there. You see, I mean, I did a couple of years ago, I was asked to by a friend who's been, you know, very helpful to me, to do something, because she has a restaurant. But no customers were coming, and clients, it was empty all the time, you know. So I went there, and in the basement, we're going back into kind of some years ago in the totalitarian Romanian communist kind of circumstance, you know. It's a lot of secret police and what we would now, you know, totally intolerable kind of activities being done by the security services, and in that basement is where some very, very atrocious things took place. And yeah, I see them. This is the problem, because I'm kind of sensitive in that area. I experience it and I see it. This is why I don't like doing it, you know. But if it's presented to me, I'll do something. But it's not something I actually go looking for. So I cleared it, it's, I have to deal with the things that are happening as if they're still happening. They're not in the physical world, but they're in the etheric world, in kind of an energy form. And I have to interact with it. I have to clear it. And sometimes it can be very sticky and messy. Sometimes it's just kind of smooth. But it has an effect on me. You know, I have to cleanse myself. I do feel a bit ill after, and I have to take it easy and so on after that. It depending on the severity. And later on I hear, people are coming now, people like the people are booking the hotel now, booking the restaurant now, whatever, you know. So I do get good things about it,
How did you get this capability, Howard? Were you born with it? Did you feel it? You know, obviously you had your accident and then you got involved with it. Did you feel something different before that, you know, when you were younger? You know, is this something, in other words, is this a capability that you always had and just born with it and you heightened a little bit? Or is this something that you actually developed and you didn't have this capability earlier?
Well, I like to think, my view is everybody has this ability. It's not something that only a few people have, you know. It's just if it's stimulated in a certain way. For me, I had to have kind of a near-death experience, you know, and that really shifted me completely. It was pretty drastic, but I think, it's just a thought actually, but I think that a lot of people, particularly when they're young, have a feeling of being kind of alienation. They don't feel connected to the world. They feel kind of an outsider. And I think that is an indicator that somebody has kind of a heightened awareness abilities, but they're kind of not just dormant, they're just not even aware of. So if something in that person's life happens to activate that, shall we say, or through some kind of a higher awareness, they feel they like to explore themselves a bit more, understand why they do the things they do, why they are the person that they are, that can also lead to things. The accident was drastic. The accident was something pretty much cosmic for me, and I had no choice after that to change. There was no choice. It was thing. But looking back, yeah, I did have this kind of awareness, but it wasn't formed. It was really expressed possibly in a kind of a negative way, as feeling kind of an outsider, or feeling kind of a sense of alienation and so on. So yeah, it's not cut and dry. It's not black and white. It's a very subjective experience.
You talk a lot about thought and the power of thoughts. And you, are we limited by our beliefs?
For sure. Not only limited by our beliefs, but we're also limited by our language. A lot of people, most people, think in linguistic terms. Language shapes how we think. And that's why it's interesting to learn different languages. That's why it's different to kind of be with different people, different cultures, because they think in a different way. It's very, very interesting that. And yeah, our thoughts can certainly affect our reality. You know, I've often talked to people who are kind of in a negative spiral of downward thinking, and the more they think in a negative way, the deeper they go into this kind of messy pool of negativity, and other people around them are affected by this. I mean, and so on. If somebody is in a very, very good vibe, feeling, and so on, it affects other people. And when you, it happens all the time. I mean, you must have many anecdotal experiences with this one. But if you are conscious of what you're doing, like I'm going to really manifest something, create something, and so on, you know, you can really influence your life by how you think. I think that's pretty much basic. And you can also obviously affect other people. Now, obviously, you want to do this in a helpful, cheerful, happy way, but it doesn't always work that way. You know, you can go into a restaurant or room or someone's house, and you feel the atmosphere right away. You know, people are just having an argument. You know, people have just been kind of fighting with each other or shouting at each other, and you just walk in, not knowing anything about that, but you feel it. I mean, or you can go into a place where people have been very, very friendly and warm and generous with each other, and you feel that too. But we all have this capability. It's just that we don't we downplay it, or we kind of dismiss it or ignore it, basically.
In your book, you say we create our own reality, which I think that's absolutely true. But you say that the two different things that help us, you talk about the law of affirmations and the law of attraction. Can you explain those?
Well, I use those as an example of their limitations, actually. Yeah, I don't actually extol their virtues. I'd use that as an example of those limitations, because affirmations, we make an affirmation, you know, for example, every day, the classic one, every day in every way, I'm a more happy person, you know. We just keep repeating this in the anticipation that we will become more happy, you know. But it's more than words, it's more than thoughts. You have to really feel it, you have to sense it, you have to actually manifest that feeling into the material world. And this is where artwork, craft work is very, very, very important. It's about energy, it's not about thinking. And I think Carlos Castaneda in his books, I mean, he spoke about affirmations, and he called them very, very pithily, called them the practices telling yourself lies. You know, well, if you tell yourself a lie long enough, maybe you believe it, but for sure. So I used it, the affirmation thing, and I'm not sure what if I used the law of attraction. I mentioned it, but I don't actually explain it. I use it as a counterpoint to actually how to create your reality, and that needs a totality of your being, every sense, not just the mind, not just thinking, not just so on. You need to use your body. You need to actually make something. I mean, this is craft work. You know, we use the word craft, you know, witchcraft, spellcraft, and the essence here is to manufacture, is to make, is to create a physical object or something which embodies that which you want, where you want to be, what you want to have in your life, and so on. So we need to use everything, the mind, the body, and of course the spirit, the work to the highest order in you. And I'll ask for your spirit guides and help us to that's a bit difficult for some people, then just say, ask your higher order consciousness to help you. So you need to be a totality in this, not just use one aspect, like the mind or something, use everything. So I'll use those two examples as pointers out to my own view on that one.
Okay. Soul loss. You talked about soul loss as if, you know, for, and you were referring to somebody losing a part of their soul. How can that be? Explain that concept a little bit.
Well, I think soul loss is obviously an evocative term and so on. It's more accurate, become a disconnection, a dissociation. I think that's a better thing. When somebody has a trauma or a challenging thing, particularly when you're young, when you really haven't got the kind of the structure, the framework to deal with this, the emotional structure. To survive something, to survive a terrible thing, a part of you has to shut down. I mean, this is nothing new about this. You know, people survive the most terrible things, you know, terrible experiences, and but when they come out of it, they come out different. They're not the same person they were before. Something has been lost, and from a shamanic perspective, it's called soul loss. But that you don't actually lose the soul, but you can certainly become disconnected to a part of your being. And for me, the soul is not just oh, what is soul? We use the word soul a lot. For me, it's something. It's a real thing. It's a biogeometric field of energy. It's which contains feelings and memories and memories of feelings. And in certain circumstances, we can lose a disconnection. It's a means of survival. It's the way to survive. How do you survive a terrible experience? I mean, a horrendous experience. You shut down. That's the only way you can survive. And that effectively is soulless. And the practitioner, the shaman, can go. I mean, go to that place, because it's not a linear event here in this kind of energetic realm. There is no time. There's just one moment in time, which anything which has ever happened to anybody is still happening. So they can go, journey to that place. I mean, the shamanic journey is a perfect medium, a perfect channel to do this, to go to that place where that situation happened, and they can find the person who suffered that trauma, and they'll find that person approximately the same age that trauma happened in their life. And it's energy which can be brought back from those other realms, other reality, and back into the physical reality and transferred or blown in or transmitted to the person who receives it. And that person's healing can start. The person may have been in therapy for many, many years, and they're still suffering and so on. Because they're missing something, you know, when they have this part back, then you find the therapy is much more effective, you know, because the whole person is there to heal this and so on.
And that's a concept you call soul retrieval, I guess. That's
soul retrieval,
right. You talk about a soul warrior. What's a soul warrior?
A soul warrior. Well, you know, it's a person, a human being who lives a life on Earth, grateful for that experience and knowing that they have the power, the ability within themselves to influence and help themselves, and by extension, help others indirectly or directly. It's a kind of cliche, the soul warrior thing, and I approached it, I think, in a kind of a tongue-in-cheek kind of way, but I think I got my point over in that one, I think, in that kind of tongue-in-cheek, humorous way, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you had some good points in it. You mentioned, well, five of them that I recall.
Yeah.
You say, number one, you would never judge. I mean, never is a tough term, but the concept is, you know, stop judging other people.
Exactly. I haven't got the book in front of me, so I can't look at the list. But certainly, when you judge somebody, it says more, or the person judges somebody, it says more about the person doing the judging than the person being judged. So a soul warrior, a person who's trying to be fully aligned with their kind of higher source, would know that, and they would refrain or be aware that by judging somebody, they're actually judging themselves, and that would be a message to them. What is not in balance within me that I'm making that judgment?
I think that's a really good point. Another thing you mentioned, that they would be a creator, not a destroyer.
Yeah, for sure. We are creators. I mean, that's what we do. We can create. There's no secret there. We create the most beautiful, magnificent things. Uh, uh, we our food, with things we can cook, the recipes we can put together. We put some beautiful architecture, design beautiful gardens. We can make wonderful paintings and art and so on. We have this ability to create. This is a unique ability. You know, we are the only species which can actually create this. We have to create kind of our own world around us. You know, we have this ability. And destruction is this kind of nihilistic attitude that can be very destructive for the person doing it. Please, as someone who's harming somebody else, somebody who's destroying, are actually doing it to themselves. It's something within themselves that is very unresolved, and they're projecting it onto the outside world. It's wars have started because of this kind of thing, you know. I mean,
I think you're absolutely right, and I think people don't appreciate, you know, that the harm they do to themselves when they're a destroyer as opposed to a creator.
Yeah, yeah.
Another thing you mentioned was accept responsibility as part of the soul warrior. I thought that was really good.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, how many times I've heard somebody tell me, "Oh, you know, I feel like terrible, and you made me feel like this way," you know, and I say to them, "Look, I don't make you feel anything. You know, nobody makes anybody feel anything. You know, they reflect something back to the person, which stimulates a kind of unhappy, non-benign feeling within them. But it's their feeling. You know, it's not your feeling. It's their feeling, and that." That reflection or that stimulation can really be a kind of a doorway to healing if you take responsibility for your own feelings. You know, you have to be responsible for yourself and what you feel. And if you do that, well, I mean, that really can open I won't say the door, but that is the beginning of the path to personal healing. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then another thing you say is 100% effort in everything. You got to commit, I guess. Huh?
100%. Yeah, I mean, you know, if you don't do 100%, you fob yourself off. You're not fobbing anybody else off. You're the one who's being fobbed off. And if you do 100%, and I mean 100%, if you do your utmost best, you know, and anything doesn't manifest or doesn't work out what you want, well, you still can be okay with that because you've done your best. You've done 100%. If things don't work out, you've done your best. There's nothing more you can do, you know. But if you do... don't do your best and things don't work out, well, you know, you're going to judge yourself, you're going to blame yourself, and Tony, I should have done this more, I should have worked harder, I should have studied more, whatever it is. No, you've got to do your 100% best, and you do your 100% best, you'll find that life will be successfully reflecting that back to you. It's breaking up a little bit. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you okay. This happens to me about every time. Is it starting to clear up yet?
Just about, yeah. Okay, let's continue.
Just continue.
I'm sorry, it's really getting flaky here. You can hear me okay?
I can hear you fine.
Can you repeat that?
Bioenergy fields.
Bioenergy fields. Well, you know, I speak of that, particularly in my healing work, as I said, beyond the physical kind of a physical corporeal kind of aspect. There's a bio field of energy, and this energy is like a tapestry. It contains that person's entire life, that entire story, and so on. And if you interact with that field of bio energy, you can really help a person in many, many ways, because you see they may be angry, always angry, but okay, what's behind the anger? What's coming? It's not about the anger. Where's it coming from? What's stimulating it? But what's the source? And by working directly with this bio-geometric field of energy, you can, it's like following the thread in the tapestry, you can go to the source and so on. So it exists. Psychics use this when you work with psychic gives you reading. I mean, they may be either directly or indirectly interacting with your biofield of energy, which contains a huge amount of information. Now the physical form we have is like a hologram, part of this biogeometric field. So it's a very fascinating and rich and interesting area to work in.
Yeah. Can you hear me a little bit better now?
Oh, it's much better now. That's great. Okay. Thanks. That's great.
We're rapidly running out of time. I wanted to talk to you about the creative enrichment practices that you have in your book. We don't have time to go in and discuss that. I just want to mention to the listeners that that's an area that in your book, The Accidental Shaman, that is worth going through. Oh, well, it's all worth going through, but that one section is worth going through.
Yeah.
But tell me what how can our listeners get in touch with you? It's Howard Charing, but you know, website, the book.
Yeah, for sure. I've got a website. It's www.shamanism.co.uk, shamanism.co.uk. My email address is shamanism@yahoo.com.
Okay. Well, Howard, thank you so much for being with us. You were a great guest. I really enjoyed talking to you, and I enjoyed reading your book.
Well, thank you, Dave. I enjoyed talking as well. So the time's gone very quick, huh?
It has. Yeah, again. Okay. Yeah, well, thank you so much.
Thank you as well. Thank you very much.
Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from the chat room for today's show and other shows will be posted on my website at davidgagan.com. You can ask other questions directly by going to the contact section of my website, and I'll publish those answers as well. Also, I cover these subjects and many more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes of both the Common Sense Spirituality Show and Aspects of Spirituality on the iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You are a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.